I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to Words on a Wire. I'm very excited about today's show because my guest is the poet Lee Herrick. He has been on this show before. I think his last book, which was called Gardening Secrets of the Dead, or his penultimate book, I should say, we featured on the show and we talked to him. He's a good friend. We're going to talk today about his third book of poetry. It is called Scar and Flower. And I'm very excited because, like I said, he's a good friend. He's a great poet and a beautiful human being. His name is Lee Herrick. He is the author of This Many Miles from Desire, Gardening Secrets of the Dead, and his third book of poems, what we're going to talk about today, is Scar and Flower. He is co-editor of The World I Leave You, Asian American Poets on Faith and Spirit, and his poems have appeared widely in literary journals and magazines. He was the Fresno Poet Laureate. And he was born in Korea and adopted in the United States when he was a little tiny one. He currently lives in Fresno and teaches at Fresno City College and the MFA program at Sierra Nevada College. Lee Herrick, welcome to Words on a Wire.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
This, I think, is your third time on the show.
I think it might be. I was on as a last part of the show guest, I think, for your first episode or in the first few episodes, I believe.
Oh, yeah, when we were doing that writer's, what did we call it? We call it, I don't even remember, but we used to do this segment where writers would talk at the end about anything they want. But no, we've had you on the show for at least two of your books. You've been on the show at least three times, and I can't help but think of our mutual friend and one of the greatest living poets today, Juan Felipe Herrera. We've had him on the show five times.
And excellent.
And I know we're going to have you on the show many, many more times because your poetry and your poetry activism is just amazing and inspiring. So welcome back.
Thank you, Dan. Thanks for having me.
I assume that we're talking to you from my hometown, Fresno, California?
That is correct.
Nice.
Fresno, yeah. Sunny day today,
And you,
we miss you here.
You were the very first poet laureate of Fresno, California. How was that? What did you set out to do when you were a poet laureate? What exactly does a poet laureate do?
Well, actually, I was the second poet laureate of Fresno.
Oh, that's right. James Tyner was the first.
That's right. That's right. But, you know, when I was appointed by then Mayor Ashley Swearengin, I had a few goals. One of them was to bridge the academic versus the non-academic poetry communities in Fresno. I wanted to try to establish a literary festival of some type, and I wanted to get poetry out into areas that might not normally be. So I was appointed in 2015, and in 2016, I helped to co-found what we call Lit Hop, which I know you've been part of. It was very exciting. Juan Felipe Herrera was our first keynote at Lit Hop, and so that was really exciting. You know, over my 2 years, I read and gave talks everywhere from book clubs full of people into their 80s, still vibrant in reading, and also in state prisons. Mm-hmm. And so it was a great thrill. I mean, I know that you know this, and maybe some of your readers do, but Fresno's literary community is vast, and it was a great honor.
And, you know, there have been a lot of writers, like you said, are in Fresno or have come out of Fresno. You know, I mean, we could just start listing them, starting with Philip Levine and Andres Montoya and, you know, Corinne Clegg Hills. We can go on and on and on. But one of the things that you did as poet laureate, the Lit Hop, the Fresno Lit Hop, was just an amazing experience. It was one entire part of the city from the Tower District to downtown, full of poetry events. You could walk from one event to another. It was an all-day thing, culminating in a nighttime reading. It was an amazing amount of work. Are you still doing that work?
Well, thank you for saying that, Dan. It was, honestly, it was a dream of mine for well over 10, 12 years to do something like this in Fresno. We did it for 3 years, and each of the years we had, in one day, about close to 50 different events at 8 to 10 different venues, bringing in about 150 writers from all over. And then, like you said, it would culminate in an evening show or reading. We had Juan Felipe Herrera, and then the second year, Gary Soto, and then last year, Carmen Jimenez.
That's right.
We have decided to take 2019 off as a capacity building year because we're finding that it's grown into something that we want to be mindful of as we move into 2020. So we're looking at funding offers. We're looking at the ways we want to try to grow it. But it was a great event, you know, and it was with intention that we brought in writers like you. We brought writers in who've won major awards and are acclaimed in their genres. But we also wanted to have it open to people who'd never read somewhere before. They might be a graduate student just starting out, or they might be a retiree who published a book. And so the diversity of Lit Hop was something that was built with intention, and we were very proud of it.
Right, right. You know, it was an amazing event.
Yeah.
There were like even simultaneous readings going on, maybe one in a coffee shop, another one in a restaurant, maybe one in that tea shop on Olive Avenue. And I remember going to your reading, and your reading was standing room only. There were hundreds and hundreds of people there, and it was a beautiful experience. And I find it amazing, Lee Herrick, that you can organize something like that. You have a full-time job teaching as a professor at Fresno City College. You have a daughter. You're a member of a family. You're a poetry activist. How do you find time to write? And when are you able to just shut everything out and write poetry?
Yeah, that is a good question. It's one of the challenges, right? You know this now, if I can say it.
Of course you can.
A new father, so I'm thrilled for you. You know, the blessings, I think, outweigh the minutes I try to manage. In other words, I think for me, if I try to say, well, I can save 20 minutes here, 10 minutes here, 5 minutes there, and try to squeeze in something, but rather I like to see my life and my writing and my family all as one sort of living mechanism, which I take great care and grateful for, so that work, quote, say, for example, doing a poetry reading or a book signing or having the good fortune to be on a radio program or work in teaching, it just doesn't seem like as much of a chore, you know?
Right.
And I look at parenting the same way. Of course, parenting is time-consuming, and of course, it's a challenge, but the blessings outweigh those things so much that I try to walk in gratitude and not anything that has to be unnecessarily stressful, because the stress is built into these things anyway. So, yeah, I don't know if that sounds like the poet in me, but I really do try to look at it that way.
Well, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I think if I could articulate it in my understanding of what you're saying, is that there is the ability that we have and that we can develop this ability to not fragment our lives, to not think of, well, I wear the writer's hat, I wear the father's hat, I wear the professor's hat, but rather all of it is connected. And to take care of your child and walk on the beach with your child is poetry and is creativity.
I think that's a perfect way to say it. That's how I try to see it, and that's how I try to live.
And I find the most productive and beautiful writing comes from writers that are able to not balance writing, not find time to write, but where writing is just a fundamental part of who they are and how they think. And that's one of the things I admire about you.
Well, yeah, and, you know, to answer your question, though, more specifically, I'm not a writer who can write by the clock or by the calendar.
Right.
So I'm reading every day. I'm reading poetry and other genres every day. I probably tinker with a poem, or I'm starting a memoir. I tinker with those things every day. But as far as really devoted writing time in the chair for an hour or two, I'm more sporadic and one of those writers who goes on velocity. So I might go 3 weeks without writing much of anything. But if I can sense that there is something calling me out, as it were, I might have a furious 4 days of really solid writing that very little can keep me from, aside from a family emergency or something like that. So I know my rhythms, and I'm able to step into them when the time is right.
I'm talking to Lee Herrick, whose third book of poems has just come out. It's called Scar and Flower. And you said something earlier that I think is also fundamental to understanding your poetry, or to experiencing your poetry, I should say, because to read your poetry isn't, you know, I would discourage a reader to go in there to read it for theme or to read it for idea, but rather to experience the poems. And one of the things that you said just now was that you walk in gratitude. And I love the way you say that. To walk in gratitude reminds me of a poem. I think it's by Yeats. She walks in beauty like the night. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking Lee Herrick walks in gratitude like a poet. What is the connection between gratitude and poetry?
Well, if I were to take that from the first year of my life, you know, I was born in South Korea and adopted, and, you know, when I was 10 months old, was placed into a family in California. And so the first year of my life was wrought with all kinds of trauma and uncertainty. And I don't say gratitude because, oh, I'm grateful to have been adopted. I'm not grateful to have left my birth country, but gratitude has infused so much of my life, especially my adult life, as opposed to more selfish times of my youth, times riddled with everything from pretty severe anxieties to some very difficult years. And so, honestly, poetry has been a way out of those things or through those times. And so gratitude, I think, can not just be an antidote to some of those emotions or experiences, but they can lighten things or widen our view of ourselves, our traumas, how we can move beyond that, even and then maybe even into a place of creating art, or if we're lucky, giving something back positive to the world.
Yeah, and gratitude also makes the poet, or just the individual, but gratitude makes the poet available for beauty, available for what's out there. Because we don't walk in gratitude, but we walk in resentment, or we walk in irony. And I think of Rilke telling the young poet, don't have too much irony. If we do that, then we close ourselves off to what is beautiful and what is boundless.
Yeah. Also, just pragmatically, I can think of the teachers who have helped me or taught me or even disciplined me in a way that might have been necessary. So it puts it in context when the contemporary writer's life, or many of our lives, include, say, requests for blurbs or letters of recommendation or requests for our time. And so whereas I can't take on everything, and we do have to sometimes say no, I always think twice and think about whether or not I can do it. And more often than not, I can.
You know, Lee, you're like a mystic. One of the things I remember when I was reading a particular mystic, I forget who, but one of the things he says is to never say no to an opportunity.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, and there's so many different things we have to weigh, time.
Right.
And things like that. My family always comes first, and I don't mean that in a sort of stereotypical or placating way, but I really do think of it like that. But if they're well, which hopefully they are and will be, it frees us up to do things. And I was listening to something on the radio the other day, and somebody described freedom as the ability to do what we want, when we want, and why we want. And I think that can apply to the writing life sometimes too.
Right. Your latest book, your third book of poetry, is called Scar and Flower. And just that title alone, I think, speaks of the depth of your poetry, because just on the most basic metaphorical level, and the thing with your poems, you can't look at your poems and say, oh, this is a metaphor for this, or this is a metaphor for that, but rather there's possibilities. There's metaphorical possibilities. There's thing in itself. But one of the first metaphors that comes to me and helps to experience your poetry on a deep level is the scar and the flower, in a sense, represent the pain and the beauty of life in which you write. Well, you write about painful things. You write about a friend who puts a gun in his mouth, but you also write about beautiful things. Can you tell us how your poems come about and how you deal with pain and with beauty?
That question was really the central framework of the whole book, when I found myself writing a lot about very traumatic, difficult things. You mentioned my friend. It was his older brother who shot himself in a park. In 2017, there was an adopted Korean person named Philip Clay who had been adopted to the U.S. and then through one of our just horrific immigration laws, of which there are many, he was deported back to South Korea, and he committed suicide jumping from a 14-story building. And I was really haunted by Sandy Hook, the Orlando nightclub shooting at the Pulse nightclub, and Michael Brown and Tamir Rice, and then even much less the things that are happening, you know, whether it's the Texas-Mexico border or Parkland High School. These things were just really haunting me at a more intense frequency than they had been. I've always been moved and disturbed by those things in American life, but over the last 5 or 6 years, they had really just come to a boil. So I was thinking about those things and at the same time having to live, having to function. I don't want to be so debilitated by traumas around me that we can't function. I mean, I think of Jack Gilbert's poem, A Brief for the Defense, where he's talking about the world's horrors. But there's this great line right in the middle of the poem where he says, we must risk delight. And so
We must risk.
We must risk delight.
Oh, wow.
In the face of these traumas, it's a risk to access delight. Or in my case, I call it, say, joy. Just being with family, being okay, right? As we should, to be joyful with our families, not completely dismissing the world's traumas. But we still have to have those personal joys, maybe so that we can go back into the world and engage with them. So the first part of the book is about some of the difficult things. And the second part of the book, I was trying to navigate my way through them.
Right. You know, I can't help but think of, you know, if you were to go into the biographies of great writers and great thinkers and great human beings who have transformed or have been part of the transformation of a more moral, ethical universe, world, most of them have in their biographies some point where there was great tragedy in their lives. And it was on some level that great tragedy that motivated them or that turned them and helped them to go into the direction that they went in. And, and I'm thinking about the poet. I'm thinking about you and I'm thinking about me and other writers who may not have had one particular great tragedy, but who have experienced tragedy over and over again, but have made it, at the risk of sounding romantic, but made it beautiful or made it meaningful. And do you find that the tragedies in your life, although horrible, and do you find that they transform you in some way and then that maybe transforms your vision as a poet?
I think so. And, you know, for my personal experience with this, I would point to being a transnational adoptee. You know, it's a pretty fundamental trauma to experience. So, again, I've never met my birth family and then raised in a country that's different language on the other side of the planet in a family who looks different than you. And I think while I've had the good fortune to have a loving adoptive family with whom I'm still very close, there are about 200,000 Korean adoptees around the world approximately. And estimates say there are around 40,000 that still don't have citizenship because of a loophole or and are under threat of deportation.
Oh, my.
And so it's sort of a recurring trauma that people can experience. In my case, Dan, I feel like it has completely been part of my connection, for lack of a better term, with poetry as such an expansive form and such an indefinitely available art. And I think this book allowed me to just be free. I've always felt free and not too restricted or concerned with certain things that I think restrict me as a poet, thinking too much about audience, for example, where I felt free writing these poems. I felt transformed, to use your word, and it felt good. The book feels good, and it's been fun reading from it this spring.
Well, it's a lovely book. And, you know, one of the questions as I was driving over here, sitting in traffic, thinking about the possibilities of what you and I could talk about, one of the questions that I wanted, that occurred to me, and I was like, well, you know, maybe I'll ask it, maybe I won't. But this is your third book of poems, and I have read all your poetry. You mentioned a little while ago that you're writing a memoir, and I can't wait for that to come out. I'm going to ask you a little bit about that because, well, you're a beautiful human being, Lee, and so I imagine your story is beautifully told, and there's a lot of really beautiful moments in it. But I'm wondering if you could be objective enough to tell us what this book, how this book is Lee Herrick now, how this book is something that you could only have written after you wrote those other two books, how it's different.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I wish, you know, there's probably not time or it's not the place to talk about the influence you've had in terms of my writing life. But I've told you this on the side.
Right. And I still don't believe it.
What?
I said, and I still don't believe it.
No, it's very true. You know, this goes back to when we were both in the Central Valley, north of Fresno, in the early 90s, I believe.
Modesto. We were in Modesto.
That's right.
You know,
that's
I was just thinking about that the other day. We used to have these barbecues in our backyard. And I used to make chicken, and I would always invite you. And we would sit out there and drink beer and talk about literature. It was a long, long time ago. And it's hard to reconcile that Lee is this Lee that's writing these great books.
Those were great times and fun barbecues. And really, I was cutting my teeth and learning about things and the discipline of writing and the language of how it could be a serious craft. And so my first book, to your question,
This Many Miles From Desire. I love that title. I remember you texted me. What do you think of this title?
Did I?
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, yeah, you're one that I would, you know, bounce ideas off of. And so that book was very identity and searching based. You know, I had not been to Korea except for just a very short 2-day stay on my way to China once. And I had not yet done a birth family search. And so that first book was very sort of eyes wide open, and I wouldn't say naive, but it's very searching based. My second book was definitely a little bit more political. It was more sure of itself. By 2012, when that came out, I had done a birth family search. I had become a father. I had gone through a pretty difficult but necessary relationship shift. And so Guarding Secrets of the Dead was definitely, I think, the perfect second book in that sense. It was a different person that was writing those poems. And so Scar and Flower, I think I could not have written 5 years ago, or certainly 10 years ago.
That's definitely the sense I get.
Yeah, this is a little bit, not just confident, but I feel like it's more in ownership of one's place politically, and not just in terms of assertion, but also in questioning, in the trouble of our country. Right. And I think that that takes, I'm not suggesting I'm particularly mature or knowing, but I do think the ability to question something in the self, or certainly in a country, is an acquired thing. And so I think that has come through in this book, hopefully, a little bit.
And you know, you have always, in my estimate, been a very spiritual poet. And I don't use the word spiritual in the pop culture sense. I use it as, you know, kind of a depth of self, an interaction with thought and with, you know, the big questions that, which, you know, not the answers, but this seems to be your most mature book spiritually as well, as if, you know, I sense there's spiritual
Thank
development
you.
Going on in your life that isn't going to stop after this book.
Thank you. That's insightful. I appreciate that. And I would like to think that's true. For me, it's a continual course, and one that I didn't really have instilled in me as a child, but one I've just sort of learned on my own, I think mainly through difficulty and searching and times of doubt in my life. And so it'll be interesting to see where that might go in my own writing, but I will say that I'm co-editing an anthology of Asian American poets on faith and spirit.
Oh,
and
wow.
So that
is that out yet?
Sort of,
Is that out yet?
No, it comes out in spring 2020 with Orison Books, and I'm co-editing it with a wonderful first book poet, adopted Korean, who it turns out, we found out recently that we're actually related.
Oh my gosh.
DNA testing. Her name is Leah Silvius.
Wow.
But anyway, it's 65 amazing poets, many of whom you'll know, you're familiar with their work. And so that book has allowed me to think in those directions a little bit in terms of faith and spirit. But yeah, I'm sure it will be something I'll explore in the memoir.
Wow. With Scar and Flower, the new book of poems by Lee Herrick, there's this poem that I just love. I think it's probably one of my favorite lines for the year, if I were able to go back through a whole year of reading. This line is, I think, is just amazing. It's the first line of the poem called Prayers, and it goes, "Imagine you are the last line in this poem." And it goes on, but I love that, Lee. Imagine you are the last line in this poem, because it not only automatically connects me to the poem, but it also carries me all the way to the end of the poem to see where it's going to leave me. We are unfortunately running out of time, and I'm wondering if you could read maybe that poem.
I'd be happy to.
And remember, for our listeners, imagine you are the last line of this poem. Please.
All right. So this is called Prayers. Imagine you are the last line in this poem, somewhere in a desert with no data or comet threads, only the creek water, light as a cloud, in the sand where plants quit. You will wait for the information, map, verdict, prayer. So be grateful, lovers. Be kind, children. And the whole blanket of stars will shake out and settle like tiny silver prayers in your hair.
That was Lee Herrick reading from his latest book of poems, Scar and Flowers. That's such a beautiful poem. And unfortunately, we're running out of time, but if you could just very briefly tell us, Lee, about this memoir that you're working on. And my producer is giving me a dirty look right now because we are running out of time. So maybe if it's possible, in a nutshell, tell us about this memoir.
You know, it's years down the road, but I'm enjoying it, so I'll just leave it at that. It's been a good process, but mainly I'm thinking about this one now, and I'm really happy to talk to you, Dan. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. The book is Scar and Flower. The poet is Lee Herrick. Lee, thank you for joining us once again on Words on a Wire.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank my guest and my good friend, Lee Herrick, for joining me on Words on a Wire. You're going to love this book. It's beautiful and it's painful. And it's called Scar and Flower, and poems by Lee Herrick. I'd like to thank you for joining us. Thank you to Stefania Castro for making our life easier on the other side of the booth. And we'll see you next week on Words on a Wire.